Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Mark.
Hey, Frankie.
How are you this morning?
I'm good, man.
The inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in New Jersey this week is last Sunday's review in the New York Times. A little restaurant on Livingston Avenue in New Brunswick was reviewed. It's called Catherine Lombardi, and it got 2 stars and a very favorable review.
Yeah, it was nice.
We own it. Go there. The review is interesting, and a number of people have called us, and I thought it would be interesting to talk about our review, not just for self-promotion reasons, but reviews are really important, and the New York Times review is one of the most important reviews you get. Not the most important, but one of the most, there's a sort of top, it's in the top tier up there.
And especially since this review is pretty similar to the first New York Times we got 14 years ago.
For Stage Left.
For Stage Left. It's really a pretty similar review.
Stage Left, outside of New York City, they don't give stars, but they give rankings. Good, very good, excellent, and extraordinary.
Well, poor, satisfactory, good, very good, excellent,
right,
extraordinary.
But good is 1 star, very good is 2 stars, excellent is 3 stars, if you're looking for an equivalent. Stage Left has had 3 stars for a long time. Our first review was 2 stars. And we opened Catherine Lombardi to be a more casual restaurant. And we designed it. It has no tablecloths. But, of course, as our partner points out, we were $800,000 over our initial market. And he says that, we keep our consulting clients in budget, and we Mark and Francisized this casual eatery. And it is beautiful, and she says it's beautiful in the review. But she gave us 2 stars. And it was interesting. A friend of ours called us yesterday, one who's a prominent food writer, and said, "Hey, saw the review. How you guys doing? You happy or sad?" I'm like, "I'm happy, man.
Right.
Look in the business plan. It's a 2-star restaurant."
It's funny because when we designed the restaurant, we really designed it to be a 2-star restaurant. But one of the things in talking to when Carla Cook was fact-checking, and that's
Carla
the reviewer,
the reviewer, yeah.
When she was fact-checking with us, She made it very clear that except for a couple of service mistakes and a couple of execution mistakes,
that we were within striking distance
of
the third star.
That we were right there for the third star. So,
ouch.
So there is a little bit of pain involved when you get a review like this. And Francis and I thought it might be fun for you to hear about a review like this from the other perspective.
People wonder what it's like to, I love to read other people's restaurant reviews, and I also think it's interesting when we get our own. We got 3.5 stars from the Star Ledger in Catherine Lombardi, which was great. Here are some of the things she says that were really great to read. I think she really got it. I like Carla Cook. I think she's a good reviewer, really good reviewer overall. She talks about she starts off talking about the olive oil that she has at home, and she says, "An identical bottle sits on each table at Catherine Lombardi, the 3-month-old Italian-American restaurant of Mark Pascal and Francis Schott." That's us. It's a fine case. This is what she said at the restaurant. "It's a fine case of not knowing what you've missed until you've had it. The rich, fragrant olive oil that widens your eyes and spoils you for lesser flavors makes you wish for a farm in Italy. And the restaurant, it's rich, too." And she makes a parallel between the olive oil we put on the tables, which, my goodness, we tried a million different olive oils before we picked that one.
Well, she recognized the olive oil. She knows that it's an expensive and well-made olive oil. So
all right, but check this out.
That was a good jumping-off point, I think.
"Indulge us. The heat from the gas log fireplace warmed my back, and its glow complemented the sensuousness of the red walls, ambient lighting with sconces that threw perforated patterns against the wall and ceiling pendants draped with dangling strands, worked with the huge windows overlooking this cityscape to create a happy airy that's worlds away from the strip mall style that dominates New Jersey restaurant world. This 100-seat place is exciting. It's beautiful and flamboyant. The food, too, is exciting and well-conceived. Think local free-range organic, and it's made up of brand-name meats, grains, cheeses, and chocolates. When the kitchen finds its consistency, the restaurant experience will likely rival the excellence of Stage Left Restaurant, which came before for these talented restaurant partners." That's us.
Just wanted to read talented restaurant partners.
I
just want everybody to know he read all those paragraphs before in order to read these talented restaurant partners.
Let me read that again. "These talented restaurant partners, Stage Left, which thrives one floor below. And what she said here was that we haven't yet achieved our consistency. And if you read the review, what's – and boy, can I tell you that restaurateurs read these reviews. Mm-hmm. What she said was she visited three times, and one of the things she says here, for example, the double veal chop was perfectly roasted one Thursday, and on the next Saturday was less so.
Mm-hmm.
A valid criticism of a new restaurant and something we really are working on.
I mean, in talking to us, she said, you know, I had two great experiences and one that was less so.
Right.
And I think those are some of the troubles that new restaurants go through when you have new employees and, you know, people have been working for me for 12 weeks instead of 6 years.
Like they have been at stage left. Yeah.
Talking to my customers, you have those types of problems. And anytime a restaurant gets 3 or 4 stars right out of the gate, it's very impressive because unless you're drawing from other restaurants, that's hard to do.
Well, and there are only two restaurants in the whole state that ever got 4 stars from the New York Times. In here. Anyway, but the other thing she says, she talks very well of the food. I mean, if pasta is your craving, Chef Anthony Bucco, who's the executive chef of both restaurants, is 30 years old, and he can fulfill your desire. The best of the bunch is ricotta mozzarella, parmesan stuffed rigatoni with meat sauce. Runners-up include the orecchietti with broccoli rabe and sausage and the beguiling linguine with garlic and shrimp flavored with a sauce of Chardonnay, lemon juice, and butter. She loved a lot of it, but... Mm-hmm. To get 3 stars, and I think this is valid.
I do too.
She says the lasagna that one of her companions got one night had a disc of bone in the lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
We put bones in the sauce.
Right.
You're supposed to take them
bones.
Out.
It's our job to get those bones because the gravy needs to have bones.
The flavor from those.
Made in it. But it is our responsibility to remove those bones.
Yeah.
And I don't care who's, you know, removing the bones, whether it's a prep cook or the head chef. You got to make sure they come out. And that's totally our fault.
Well, and I think that what's very interesting is when you talk about a restaurant that is in that 3-star category, what you're looking for and what we've, thank heaven, achieved at Stage Left is a consistency over time. But, you know, that comes with time. And it's interesting how you can have a 2-star review that you're ecstatic about or a 2-star review that you're disappointed in.
Well, this was clearly a really good 2-star review, a really good, very good.
Well, it also...
I mean, just, again, from having spoken to her and having, or chef having spoken to her, I should say, and reading the review, you know that she thought very highly of the restaurant.
Well, and I also think that it depends on what you're shooting for in the restaurant. I mean, if we were doing, in Stage Left, contemporary American cuisine at the way that we're doing it, and we got 2 stars, frankly, I'd be disappointed.
That's true.
And I'd feel that we hadn't gotten what we want, but... It depends on what you're looking for. And I could see us at some point opening a 1-star restaurant that we intend to be a good 1-star restaurant. You know, and I think that a restaurant really falls down and you only have a review that hurts you when you don't fulfill the expectations that you set out. If you have the best pizzeria on the planet and it's just counter service, well, that's great. It's the best pizzeria on the planet and a counter service. Is it a 4-star restaurant? No. But is it a great 1-star restaurant? Yes, it is. Hey, listen, we have coming up in the next segment, we have the author of a great comic book called The Feast of the Seven Fishes. His name is Robert Tunnell, and it's a comic strip that was initially published as a comic strip that is now in a book. It's about the Italian-American tradition of the Feast of the Seven Fishes on Christmas Eve. It's a fascinating, extraordinary book, and it really harkens back to Mark's childhood.
My kind of comic strip.
We'll talk more with Robert Tunnell in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shadd of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi's in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we have with us a special guest, Robert Tunnell, is a writer, director of movies and television. He's had success with a couple of graphic novels from Image Comics, The Black Forest and The Wicked West. And now he's gone to a slice of life family piece, a graphic novel called The Feast of the Seven Fishes. Robert Tunnell, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Robert. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks.
So, Robert, I want to start out by asking you, what is this? Is it a comic book? Is it a cookbook? Is it an anthology of your family? Some kind of short novel?
I think that's an excellent assessment. You know, nobody ever kind of did anything like this before, and I'd like to say, you know, that it was because I had this just brilliant vision, but, you know, like most things, like I read a book on Pink Floyd once a few years ago because I'd always sort of perceived them as this just, you know, they had this plan, and you know, and you saw it evolve through the albums and this overarching vision of what they wanted, and then absolutely, as it turned out, they just kind of found their way. I was passionate about telling this story because Christmas Eve at our house was such a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I pitched the notion to my manager, because I'm primarily in the film business, actually, and I threw the idea out to him, and he said, you're an idiot. You know, writing about that.
We've had lots of people say that to us over the years.
And many banks, when we tried to get the money to open our first restaurant, said that very same thing.
But then again, you're talking on the radio show that we're idiots for trying to start.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, Galileo was Italian, I always say so. And, I couldn't let it go, and at the time I was having this success in comics, and I thought, well, you know what, I'm just not, you know, he didn't seem bothered, like there was some sort of perception like it was easier to do the comic strip as opposed to a screenplay, and so I got to lay the story out there, and as we were doing, and I realized that what I was also doing was sort of preserving a tradition, you know,
so what,
primarily oral.
Why don't we tell everybody exactly what this is? That you've done here. It's a comic strip that you kind of put together over a series of time and have now placed in a book to tell a story. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then as the time came to put the book together, we realized, hey, why not add a cookbook section where we can at least preserve, you know, not attempting to be exhaustive with it at all, but hey, this is what we do.
Everybody out there should know what we're talking about is a book called The Feast of the Seven Fishes. It's a collected comic strip. It's billed as a collected comic strip and Italian holiday cookbook. And it's 67 pages of great, fun, funny, humorous, insightful comics about a Christmas Eve where an Italian-American fellow brings home a non-Italian-American girlfriend to the traditional holiday dinner.
Pretty much the story of my life, Robert, by the way.
So why did you choose that? I mean, did you bring home a non-Italian American girlfriend to a holiday dinner one evening?
Yeah, among others. I brought several Italian girls home too, but yeah, I brought one home, and I just remember my great grandmother the look.
You know. Yeah, my grandmother, my Irish grandmother, thought that to date an Italian was interracial dating. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Robert, just so you know, I got the exact same look, except I married that girl.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
well, you know, I am married. My wife, who wrote the cookbook section, is Italian. So, you know, but my mother was Italian. My father wasn't. So there was already, you know, there was some precedent there. But, you know, it was, you know, how those families are. As my mom said, you know, I was just going on and on about my great grandmother one day. I just was so crazy about her. And my mom said, you know, yeah, she was great to you. Because you were a boy.
It wasn't just that. It was, you know, you get farther down the chain as far as grandparents and great-grandparents, and certainly in my culture, and all of a sudden the same woman who was, you know, beating your mom with a wooden spoon was...
I was thinking about the rolling pin, but, you know.
Either way, was making sure you got an extra piece of cocoa at the table, you know?
Now...
Exactly.
I think that what I thought was that you used the device of bringing the waspy girlfriend home to the Italian-American Christmas Eve was a great device because, in a way, if you're not Italian and you're reading the book, you are the waspy girlfriend learning about all this stuff and a little amazed by it.
Yeah, well, you know what? I have to say, in every single interview I've ever done, you're the first person that ever picked out what I thought was going to be this really obvious device because... If he had brought an Italian girl home, he wouldn't have had to sit and explain what they were having.
It's funny because Mark and I, and we were preparing for this show, and I said, listen, you should take the lion's share of this one. And I read through the book, and I made some notes, and I looked up a little about you, but I gave Mark the book to bring home. And he came in today. He said, I think maybe you should have done this. I said, why? He said, because I kept going, yeah, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I read an article. There was a thing in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette at Christmas time, and they had interviewed some family up there, you know, that did the feast, and they, for some reason, I don't know why they did it, but they gave them a copy of the book. I mean, the book wasn't the impetus of the article, and it was one of the coolest things, of all the reviews and everything, one of the coolest things is this guy says, you know, it was like Janelle came into our house and was hiding and writing everything down.
Well, I'll tell you, having been a guest at many an Italian-American Christmas Eve, I mean, Mark and I have been best friends for 20 years, and I usually have made it a point in the last 20 years to spend a little bit of time with his family there. And we've actually opened up a restaurant based on his Christmas Eve dinner recently.
That's actually a fact.
And the book, I thought it was really fascinating, and I recommend it to people. We're going to link people to our website through our website, restaurantguysradio.com, as to where you can get the book. And we'll be talking more with Robert Tunnell about this book in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schatter, stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we are here talking with Robert Chanel, who's written this great graphic novel, is what we call an extended comic book these days. It's called The Feast of the Seven Fishes, The Collected Comic Strip, An Italian Holiday Cookbook.
Pretty good timing on that Catherine Lombardi commercial, huh, Robert? They did a good job at the station today.
It's perfect.
I love the accordion music in the background. That was really sweet.
That's the best Christmas carol for polkas.
I'm just going to digress for just 1 minute. Polkas? Where did the polkas come from in your family? In his family.
I don't know. I mean, I remember just, you know, the 8-track, you know, with the Yankovic character, you know, with his harmonica cats. And
I got to tell you, we didn't do polkas in my family.
Are you sure? You don't have some Eastern European in you there somewhere?
It's very big in the Italian community in north central West Virginia and western Pennsylvania.
And that's where this takes place, in West Virginia, Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. That's the gist here.
Yeah.
So are these characters real? Are these real people in your book?
The old guys are. And the grandmother, the great-grandmother, pretty much is. I mean, the lead character, Tony, I was just never that sensitive. I'd like to say that I was like the guy that every girl said, you know, he's a nice guy, you should marry him, and that was not the case.
As long as you found the one girl to say that, that's really all that matters.
I did.
Unless you're Mormon, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, never mind.
About 10 years ago, I did a documentary just for myself and my family with my grandfather, who was then still living, and his two brothers, cooking the fish, because I was just, you know, you wake up one day and you go, my God, I'm 30 and I have no idea how to do any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And when the documentary was done, people kept saying, you know, that could be a movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I drew a lot of their dialogue. You know, a lot of the dialogue in the book is actually them. The stuff with the younger people was sort of based on some other, you know, other people. It's not strictly autobiographical. I didn't want to get into that. I mean, you know, I live by that axiom: just because it happened to you doesn't make it interesting.
Right.
You know?
I think the thing that's interesting about the book is the plot of the book is kind of nice and sweet, but it really is almost it's all a setup so that you can see inside that culture and you can spend an evening, you can spend Christmas Eve with that family, and I think that's really sweet.
As corny as it might sound, and I love Christmas. I mean, I love everything about it. Having my own kids, I love it.
Actually, we're going to come back in a minute. We're going to be talking more with Robert Chanel about his graphic novel, The Feast of the Seven Fishes, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Robert Tunnell. He is the author of a graphic novel, read comic book, called Feast of the Seven Fishes, the Collected Comic Strip, an Italian Holiday Cookbook. He is a writer-director of movies and television. He's had a couple of other graphic novels, The Black Forest and The Wicked West. And this is a family piece about an Italian-American Christmas Eve. Now, Robert, what are the traditions that you wanted to sort of document in this book?
Well, like I said, there's a growing disconnect. You know, you get 3, 4, 5 generations, removed from the original immigrants, who themselves were just gung ho about becoming Americans,
right.
Good Americans, and I'm happy to be a good American, but there's just a lot of wonderful things about my Italian heritage I'd like not to lose.
Yeah,
and I wanted to share that. And the other thing I started to say before that I think. It's all become about consumption, and I don't mean a food, and I love that on Christmas Eve, we're not at the mall. We're having this huge thing. We had 50 people at dinner this year.
That's great.
And that's building a memory, and for my kids, they're already having to stuff the calamari, and you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of stuff I wanted to grab hold of, where we make legitimate memories of experiences as opposed to just buying stuff.
Now, our grandparents and our great-grandparents and even to some extent our parents were really focused on becoming American. Is something lost along the way in their desire to assimilate? Have we lost something?
Well, I mean, I certainly, not to get too heavy, I certainly wouldn't want America to become, balkanized, where we just had little pockets of different cultures. They were excluding one another. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about this country is that I think we tend to take the best of, what came here, and I do think something was lost, and I'm desperate to grab hold. I just wish I could go back 30 years, just 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk down the street in Reeseville, West Virginia, and you heard English as a second language.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's really interesting, and I think that people are really embracing their heritage, and I think it's interesting in a way, in a lot of ways. I think, a lot of the cities in America are being revitalized because people, after having been out, the goal was to get out of the city and get out to the suburbs. Well, a generation passed by out there. A lot of people getting bored in the suburbs are moving back to the cities, and we're seeing them revitalized. And a lot of people who were Italian-American or Irish-American or Hungarian-American, they went through, maybe their grandparents tried to assimilate. Maybe, I have one friend whose father speaks Italian. He didn't learn Italian as a kid, and he could, bash his head against the wall because he's taking Italian classes now.
Right.
And there's a term for it. They call it, in my family, they call it a born-again Irish, Like, your grandmother was trying so hard to assimilate into the culture, and you're, reading Irish literature and trying to learn Gaelic,
Well, you want to feel connected. I mean, and it extends beyond any culture. I mean, I do genealogy for fun just because it's, it's a wonderful way to kind of connect to history.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny that as a kid, I'd say to my grandfather, teach me Italian. He'd say, why do you want to learn that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And I come out the other end knowing how to cuss. And that's
right, that's
it.
That's all we got are the curse words now.
That's it.
That's the ones when we were in trouble.
And I got that from Johnny Mascara on the playground.
His name was Johnny Mascara?
Johnny Mascara.
I bet he took a lot of ribbing, huh?
No, Johnny was a big boy.
Oh, I guess. Either that or he was a big kid.
So, Johnny thumped me plenty.
Now, is this book, do you think, did you write it more for Italian Americans and your kids to help preserve your traditions, or did you write it as a sort of a history for people from the outside to look at these sorts of traditions?
I go to my default answer, yes. I just wanted to share it. I thought that once people saw inside of it, they would see themselves and understand it. I mean, I think it's the sort of thing that if, a Scots Irish family, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, wanted to do the Feast of Seven Fishes, I say, why not? Because it's great food and it's a wonderful experience. I mean, enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such great food and it's such a good time. And I just don't want it to go away.
You know, one of the more interesting things I think about what you said before, and I think it really was very insightful, is that if you have these traditions of things you do on the holidays, and one of the best ways for people to come together is over a meal or around a fire, whether preparing the meal or eating the meal, I mean, that becomes the central Christmas tradition. And if it's not about a feast, because, I mean, feasts go way back in our culture, and in many, almost all cultures, you come together over some sort of a feast to celebrate an event.
Yeah, especially Italians.
If you lose that, Well, what are you left with? You're left with presents, the mall, what'd you get?
But it's Francis, I think you miss it just a little bit there, because actually, and I'll quote one of your characters, Robert, in your book. So everybody's invited, okay, and people do drop by, and you know, Robert was just saying he had 50 people at Christmas Eve this year. But one of your characters says, "Come early and watch the show," because go ahead.
It is a show.
Well, is the show? I see. What I like as well. I think that the idea of coming together and preparing a meal. I mean, I think that's great. It's like working together. You said your kids are learning the stuff of calamari. I think that's awesome.
Well, it is. I mean, my father-in-law is Italian, and we've actually grown closer because his family, he stopped doing this when his mother died. And actually, they didn't even do it. They went to the older aunt's house. Mm-hmm. So he had not actually done it for 25 years. And for him, it's just, I mean, he can't get there early enough. And start, you know, skinning the eel, which is always an interesting thing.
You know what I love, I have to tell you? The Feast of the Seven Fishes, we've had a couple of people on the show, we've talked about this around Christmas time. And the Feast of the Seven Fishes, people, you know, have the old family recipes that go way back, and they'll talk about, like, the Italian-Americans talk about, well, these are the seven fishes we've always had in our, you know, back since the times of Italy. And you look it up, and, like, those fishes don't exist in Italy. But does it really matter? You know what I mean? It's the myth. And
hey, you know what? I adore pesto. I'd like to tell you that we had it on the table. I don't think my great-grandmother had a clue what pesto was.
Sorry.
You know?
I think what's interesting is that you have, I mean, when you're talking about Italian food, people say, and we're in Jersey, right? So we've got a large Italian-American community, and we have less of a recent immigrant community here than we did, say, 50 years ago, 70 years ago. And I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in an Italian that was about a third African-American, a third Italian, and a third Irish. And the Italian restaurants were great. I mean, Mr. Libretti was in the kitchen of Libretti's and making manigot that was amazing, right? Well, now the Libretti's is still there, but the Libretti's don't own it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's become a very watered-down tradition of what it once was. And I think that to focus on bringing good food back is to focus on, you know, connecting with that older culture.
But
I think that Italian-American cuisine is distinct from, you know, generic Italian food. Mm-hmm. Well, don't you find?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I so many Italian restaurants I can't even eat at. I mean, I just can't. You know, you come from such a unique experience. I mean, geez, I never physically saw a round pizza till I was 7 years old. That we went to a Pizza Hut. I thought they were all rectangles that came in shirt boxes. I mean, you know what? We didn't have that. We had the square or rectangular pizza. And so, you know, I guess I was always approaching restaurants outside of, you know, your region or some of the bigger cities with trepidation, putting it lightly. I mean, we just don't have good Italian food in restaurants.
You guys use an expression in the comic strip that my family didn't use, so you got to tell me what it means. Cake eater.
Nobody knows. It's a derogatory term towards those of the, you know, I guess technically now they could call me a cake eater because I'm not Catholic. You know, the family took a fork in the road and,
So cake eater is not Catholic?
But cake eater is kind of like what they call. Well, actually, you know, I used cake eater because it was, at least in Pittsburgh, they didn't know what I was talking about. I mean, generally they call them the snuffies, you know, which would be the.
That's great.
The English or whatever.
But Catholics eat cake. I'm sure of it.
We never could figure out.
I was raised Catholic. I know. Anyway, we're talking with Robert Tunnell. He is the author of a graphic novel called The Feast of the Seven Fishes, the collected comic strip, an Italian holiday cookbook, and we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design. 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shadow, stage left, and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Robert Chanel. He is the author of a new book, Feast of the Seven Fishes, the collected comic strip and Italian holiday cookbook. He is a writer and director of movies and television, and he's come into graphic novels. And it's my understanding that you are planning some more graphic novels. Is that true?
It's been, this has been the greatest thing that ever happened to me, these things, because for some reason at this point, Hollywood has decided that there needs to be some sort of an existing property that they can actually physically, maybe there's post-literate, I don't know. But when they can look at the book, they can see the movie.
Are you using this book to make a movie from this?
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
I absolutely want to do the movie. I was in L.A. 3 weeks ago. I've had a series of meetings. I'm actually coming to New York this week for another meeting. I don't, you know, it's not going to be a $50 million movie. It doesn't have to be.
Right. I mean, how much does fish cost?
I'm sorry?
I said, so how much does fish cost? It's not that much. It doesn't have to be a $50 million.
We get away for dinner for under $200.
Right, exactly.
And I want you to consider me for the part of Uncle Frankie.
Okay, you got it. Yeah, and by the way, I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, but we have a website, feastoftheSevenFishes.com, and if you go on there, there's actually a little movie.
Right.
That
promo video.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that promo video is that, as much as anything, has gotten the distributor types excited about it.
Wow.
Because when they look at that video, they go, oh, we see the movie.
Now, this whole thing takes place in 1983.
Uh-huh.
Are you doing other years, or what's the big plan there?
That's the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
The dream I'd like to do would be like, you know, my great-grandmother's first Christmas in America.
Oh, my God.
You know, 1912. You know, because it'd be drastic changes, and I do know where the characters go, and the characters, you know, they started online. We just gave this thing away online initially.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The characters have a following. I mean, particularly like Juke. Everybody wants to know what's going to happen to Juke because he's like the narrator in a sense. He's the tribal
That's
historian.
Awesome. Now, we're going to link on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We're going to link to yours, but why don't you give it out on the air for those listening in podcasts and on the airwaves?
Sure. It's feastoftheSevenFishes.com. Seven is spelled out. And you can, you can watch the movie. You can read some samples of the book. There were some recipes. I'm not sure if there's still recipes up there or not. And, of course, you can buy the book. You can buy signed copies of the book.
The book is really great. And there is a cookbook back there as well.
And you know what's great? I appreciate, like, you guys, that no one has yet come to us and said, who do you think you are for writing a cookbook? Because, you know, Italian food, as you guys know, it's actually a pretty simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing at least the peasant style that we do, and we've gotten such lovely compliments.
Well, I think it seemed like you were trying to put the whole package together of this was my Christmas Eve. This is the Christmas Eve of millions of Italian Americans in this country. And maybe the food's a little different in Pittsburgh or West Virginia than it is in
Brooklyn
or Nutley,
if your family's Calabrese
or
Napolitan, you know, it could be different.
Right.
But the idea of putting it all together, I think it's terrific. And, you know, who are you to write a cookbook? Listen, if that's the food that your family makes and eats every year, I mean, that's terrific.
You want to just thank God that they've actually, I've heard from people who prepared the recipes and they worked. We were a little nervous.
I got one tiny little criticism for you.
Go for
the
it.
The tomato sauce?
It's gravy.
It's
that and?
Well, you put, it's got the anchovies in it. You got to make sure the next time you write you reprint the book, that you make sure you call that the Christmas Eve tomato sauce or gravy, because you only put anchovies in on Christmas Eve.
Can I ask you two Italian something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
Why do you only put anchovy sauce in on Christmas Eve? What if you want it on Easter?
You
can't have it?
You can't have it.
I,
once a year.
I've just been educated. Although I got to tell you, know my wife did.
You Italians are crazy.
She did an anchovy angel hair pasta, and then grilled fresh sardines and laid them on top of it.
Fresh sardines grilled are spectacular,
yeah.
And they taste nothing like
the can.
The little things you get in a can, and you got to forget about that when somebody says sardines.
Oh my God! I couldn't stop eating them. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Amazing, especially if you grill. I have a favorite line. Reminded me of my grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
Because my grandmother would have reacted differently. They're talking about bringing the Protestant girlfriend to midnight mass.
Right.
And the grandmother says, "It's all right. Then they'll throw you out." My grandmother would have said, "No, you can't come. You're not Catholic.
You're not allowed
come.
In the doors."
Well, you know, it's just my great-grandmother, there's that great joke, and it just sums her up perfectly. It would have been like, you know, like the two old Italian ladies that are putting the wash on the line, and the one's crying, and the other one says, "What's wrong?" And she says, "Oh, my daughter ran away to New York, and she's working as, you know, as a whore." And the other one says, "Yeah, but at least she doesn't smoke."
You know,
I think I see where the humor in the book comes from. I think I got it.
You know, I think that I'll hearken you back. One of the things that I like about people who grew up in Catholic traditions is basically in Catholic countries, Catholicism is at heart a mystical religion. I mean, it has a mystical element to it more than most or any Protestant religions that I know of. And I think that that really lends to tradition of like, and numbers have great importance, like the seven fishes and Christmas Eve. And there's a lot of ritual that I think this book really encapsulates. And I think it's really sweet that you've done this, that you've put this all together. And I hope you do get to make a movie out of it.
Yeah, every family's got kind of a different reason why you're having seven or nine fishes. I was told that it was because of the seven sacraments. What was the reason your family gave you that you had to have seven fishes on Christmas Eve?
We were just told. I was just told it was the seven sacraments.
Yeah. I was told there would be big trouble if you only ate six. Big trouble.
Right.
That I didn't get. I mean, like I said, she was tired at that point.
I also heard actually from other Italian Americans who are like, seven all wrong, it's five, the five wounds of Christ. That's what it is. Seven, right. Those people don't know what they're talking about.
People do three, people do nine, there's some that do as much as 13.
Oh my. Anyway,
13, you would never do 13.
I gotta tell you, if you want to form your own opinions, you should pick up the book. It's called The Feast of the Seven Fishes, the collected comic strip and Italian holiday cookbook. You can get an autographed copy by going to our website and linking to feastofthesevenfishes.com. And when the movie comes out, that's going to be worth a lot of money. Plus, you got a cookbook for Christmas Eve. Hey, thanks for joining us on the
Robert,
show.
Thank you so much.
Guys, thank you. It was great.
It's been swell. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was great. I love this book, I tell you. And I love the book because I've been that outsider at your house for the last 18 years.
I like it
because
it's a comic strip and it's easy to read.
Yeah, I know. You know what I want to object against? Every time we interview somebody who's written like a 400-page book on environmentalism, I get to read that one. You get the 67-page comic strip book.
It was very entertaining.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Their guest today was Robert Tunnell. His book is The Feast of the Seven Fishes, and you can pick that up at his website. You can check it out on our website later on. I think he's a really cool dude. Hey, listen.
Going to be making a movie out of that.
We started the show talking about restaurant reviews, and specifically about the review of Catherine Lombardi, which got a really great two-star review in the New York Times over the weekend. But, you know, there's another place where you out there in the audience and you out there in podcast land can go and voice your opinion and be the restaurant reviewer. New Jersey Monthly Magazine, which is one of the nicest magazines in New Jersey and a very important dining publication, they do a Reader's Choice poll every year. And so if you've dined in New Jersey and you want to voice your opinion on what you think the best restaurants of various types are throughout the state, you can go to njmonthly.com and fill out their online Reader's Choice poll. And I think that's a really great way for you, the public, to be heard. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I always like the Reader's type polls where they get a large sampling.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You know, some of the polls where, you know, it's seven votes and that's the winner.
Right.
You know, New Jersey Monthly gets thousands and thousands of votes and they tabulate them, and I think that that's a really good way to get a feel for what the public
people,
choice
the people
is.
Think. And we've actually won a few...
you know, the Golden Globes of the Restaurant Awards.
We've actually won a number of awards in the past. And it's really a great honor to be able to do that. But whatever your feelings are in restaurants, it's a great way to make yourselves heard. So go to njmonthly.com. We'll link you from our site as well there.
So today we were talking to Robert Tunnell in his book, The Feast of the Seven Fishes. And as I'm reading the book, the whole premise of the story is that
the wasp girlfriend comes to the Italian
to the Italian dinner and basks in this whole feast. And my girlfriend, now wife, I remember her first holiday event and Christmas Eve event with my family. And I remember her just wide-eyed and like, what's going
on
here?
And at what course did she hit the wall?
Well, she thought it was over.
When the pasta was done?
When the pasta went away, she was like, oh, okay, great.
I'm stuffed.
And then the next set of, then the stuffed calamari and the stuffed shrimp and all those things come out for the next course on Christmas Eve. And she was just like, oh, my God, how much more food is coming?
And a lot.
And I said, how many fish did you have? She's like, five. Okay, well, there's at least two more coming.
I got a question for you. Just tell me, what did your grandmother say when she had finished, hit the wall in the pasta, and was eating as much as she possibly could?
She said, you eat like a bird. That's what she said.
And that was Catherine Lombardi, who the restaurant is named after. You should come and try it, and don't eat like a bird. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.